Welcome to Under the Fig Tree podcast. In today's episode, hosts Reverend Micah Glenn and Reverend Dr. Ben Haupt sit down with a special guest as they meditate under the fig tree.
What's up, what's up, what's up? Welcome back to another episode of Under the Fig Tree. Ben, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You know, it's we're recording later than we normally do. A little foggy brain.
Right?
Someday we'll create BTS and people see how many times it takes me to get the podcast going. I mean, there's just, you know, three quick phrases, but sometimes we struggle, sometimes we don't.
Better you starting our podcast than me.
You know what? I think it would be good one day for you to do it exactly the way I do. I think the people would be very interested in seeing that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they would be interested in a sort of cringy sort of, oh, we feel bad for Ben sort of way.
Whatever creates the content, in my opinion. Today, we're joined by two fantastic guests on Under the Fig Tree, two seminarians, two concluding seminarians, Dion Hole and Nick Palmer. How are you doing today?
Spectacular as usual.
Doing well.
And just quick question, because you're both concluding students, both MDiv students. Dion, I'm assuming at some point you'll get some context for this, but you've been here, you haven't gone on your vicarage yet.
No.
But you will at the end of this year then convert over into your regular call once you finish all together.
Right.
And Nick, you're returning, well, you have returned from a vicarage. And where were you a vicar?
I was a vicar at Salem Lutheran Church and School in Afton, Missouri. So it was a local vicarage.
Sure.
Yeah. And so the thing that we're really excited about for the two of you, for those that are watching online, as people can see, you're straight out of college. You're, you know, like 20, 22 years old. And no, I'm just kidding. People recognize that I've been starting to put the gray hair on.
Right.
But both of you are seasoned. You're experienced. You are second career students. So we've had some listeners, some viewers that specifically said, "Hey, I'd love an episode of Under the Fig Tree specifically for second career students." And both of you, it looks like, I mean, we don't know yet. We're still praying about it, but it looks like you're both going to graduate and get called. So,
so far, we
thought we'd bring Lord on willing. Guys that you know. We winnowed it down from this huge pool, and here you are, the two guys. No, I'm just kidding.
But we were the two that were available.
we're really glad to have you. And so, interested in hearing about vicarage. Interested in hearing a little bit about what a deferred vicarage is, and just interested in kind of how you got here in the first place. That's usually where we start.
Usually where we pick up. Yeah. Just what's your story? What led you to consider then begin to pursue ministry as a career?
Go, Nick.
Oh, I get okay. Yeah. So my path started, I guess, when in confirmation, my pastor said something to me after we were confirmed, after the service, in the receiving line, actually. Hmm. He said, "Hey, Nick, you know, the church needs pastors. Maybe you should consider. I think you would be good at it."
And is this eighth grade?
This is eighth grade. Okay. So this is, So
traditional confirmation.
Yeah, eighth grade. Yeah, mid-90s. And that was the first time anybody had ever said anything like that to me. And in fact, I had never even considered it before. So I was really caught off guard and I thought he was crazy. It's like, no way. I'm not, you know, there's no church workers at all in my family. I don't have church worker background at all in my family. So it was never something that was on my radar and nothing that anybody ever talked about. And so I kind of shrugged him off, really. It's like, I'm not going to do that. And then fast forward, you know, I go through high school, college, and I get married. And I actually lived in the same church that I grew up in is where my wife and I moved back to. The pastor was no longer there, but same church, and I'm active in the church again. And, you know, I'm getting asked to do more and more in the church. You know, you start with the board of trustees, help keep the church up. And then next thing you know, I'm on the board of elders and teaching Sunday school, teaching youth group. Then I'm chairman of the board of elders and start wondering, you know, in my head, then I'm starting to think, maybe maybe I did miss my call. Maybe Pastor Wallenberg was right all those years ago, and this is what I should be doing.
And what kind of work were you doing at that time?
So my family has a food service distribution company, so I wasn't involved professionally with the church at all. I was in the food service. We'd sell to restaurants and bar and grills, things like that, all their food supplies.
Sure.
And so my experience with the church was just all volunteer-based, doing, you know, being an elder, being a trustee, just being a Sunday school teacher. My wife and I team taught the junior high school, Sunday school, and then we did youth group. And then we had kids, too, so we were bringing up our kids into the church. And that was really what got me really thinking about it, because I knew when we had kids that I wanted my kids to grow up in the church. Mm-hmm. And the more I got involved, the more I did the Bible study. You know, we did adult Bible studies with our pastor, and you know, and then I'm helping, you know, if he stepped, something came up, he couldn't be there, he would ask me to teach, you know, in his spot. And it's like, people are, and then people in my Bible class say, hey, Nick, you're pretty good at this. Maybe you missed your calling. It's like, oh, maybe they're right. And maybe I should be doing this. So I kind of started thinking about that, talked with my wife, and she kind of helped guide me. Gave me, she's like, well, if you want to really, this is something you want to do, you think you should do, let's really dive in, you know, because I wasn't teaching a whole lot, just a little bit. She's like, let's dive all in and let's really see if you still want to do this, you know, after being like teaching Sunday school and
like
doing
you taught one Bible study, right, you're like, that's amazing, I want to do this for life.
You teach, you step in and teach adults once in a while, let's just make sure.
Our wives are so wise.
It was good advice, and we did that, and you know, I still wasn't getting turned away. And ultimately, what really did it, really pushed me over the edge, is I was a lay delegate to our district convention. And our district president is getting up there and he starts lecturing the pastors there that to start, if you see men in your congregation, say something, let them know we need pastors in the church. You need to be out there saying things. And then and then the Senate president, so President Harrison was there too. He gets on the stage, says the same thing. And so I'm starting to feel really like, oh man, maybe I'm starting to feel convicted. You know, my conscience is like, oh, maybe I talked to my pastor. You know, strangely enough, I never talked to my pastor before this about it. And I did, and he agreed. He confirmed what I was thinking and what other people were saying too, that I should pursue the ministry. And so I did. So then we started looking into it, and here we are.
I think I know the answer to this just based upon what you've already said, but what did you study in undergrad?
A business. Business administration. Yeah.
I just assumed. Which again, it's one of those things. I get this as director of recruitment all the time. I didn't go to Concordia.
I didn't
study
pre-sem.
They've heard a lot of people have heard about those routes, like that there's this college route, and they're thinking what they can do to prepare. And I always get to chime and say, well, hey, I didn't do the pre-seminary route. And you know, here I am. It requires a little bit of catch up in the languages, but that's about it. Everybody else, even if you have some biblical understanding from an academic perspective, we all start in the same classes after the languages. So it's, I'm assuming that was all kind of, again, aside from being able to dive deep into the languages, that you just,
I wouldn't, just because you haven't gone to a Concordia or you haven't studied the biblical languages, that absolutely is not a reason to not pursue the ministry at all. I mean, we have summer Greek here. I mean, there's lots of guys that go, I mean, it happens every year. You have a full class. Lots of people take summer Greek and even more take summer Hebrew. So,
And Nick, you brought your family along. Your kids were all going to school and living in your home. So, I think for, Deanne has a little bit of a different story, and we'll transition to that in a minute. But I'm interested in what was it like for your kids to move to St. Louis, live on campus, get acclimated to new schools, and how was it for your wife coming in, finding a job, finding her place in community? Because those are questions that we hear a lot from prospective second career students.
My family was very supportive, and I think that's key for anybody that's coming to seminary, that if your family is, if your wife or your kids, especially your wife, is not on board, don't come.
Be tough. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Or not yet.
Not Wait. Yet. Yes. Yeah. Not yet. Yeah.
Keep
right.
Working on
Keep
it.
Keep working
have
on
her,
it.
Because, have her watch this yeah. episode. Yep. It's gonna. Yep. You know. Because
they need to be on board. Yeah. And I thank God that my wife was on board and she was very supportive of that. And it was a curveball. I mean, it was not something, when we talk about this all the time, when we got married, this was not on the radar at all. We were going to grow up in our hometown with both of our families and, you know, live happily ever after or whatever. But this is not what we had planned. But we both knew that this is kind of where, this is where God was leading us. And we weren't the same people we were when we got married. And thank God for that. And so we talked, we sat down, and so after my wife and I are like, okay, we're going to do this, you know, after we did the visits, and we brought our kids with us on our visits.
Yeah.
We talked to them about it, let them know what we were doing, what we were thinking about doing, and they were supportive. When we came here, my daughter was going into sixth grade. So when we moved here to St. Louis, my wife, my daughter was a sixth grader, and my son was a fourth grader. So I have two kids, and my wife's a nurse. And they were on board, and I was really, I'll say I was pretty selfish. I didn't think too much I figured that they wouldn't be a big deal. And we came here, and I remember touring the school, with my daughter and looking around. I'm like, oh, this is a big transition for my daughter. Mm. And, I didn't really realize what sacrifice my kids were making until I was actually. Because we went to the lunchroom and I sat, and there's this huge lunchroom, and I sat here and thought, my daughter's not going to know one person in this room.
Mm. Wow.
And they didn't complain, or they were on board. So I really am thankful for that. And I'm glad. And it turned out that they love the seminary campus. There's lots of kids on campus. There's professors' kids. You know.
Yeah, Vince was just in my house over the weekend.
That's right. Yeah. So they're all playing together. They have a great time. We have a whole, we call it the woods. Yeah. It's all married housing with families that have kids, and mine are kind of towards the older end of the spectrum, which is fine. They love babysitting and.
We have a seminary youth group, and
we have
so
a seminary
my kids
youth
go
group.
And...
Yeah, so if you have middle school or high school kids, you already have a built-in youth group. They actually went to the National Youth Gathering last year. It was a fantastic group, and they had a lot of fun. They get together every week and just really bonds those friendships together. And there's lots of schools to pick from. We have the public school that's here in the neighborhood that people can walk through, and then there's great. Lutheran schools, a lot of them offer scholarships to seminary families, so it's an awesome opportunity to be able to have whichever route is best for your family to take. Or there's lots of families that homeschool too, so we have all three different styles going on here on the seminary. So you'll have similar family dynamics no matter which way you go, which is nice that you have that.
Yeah. And your wife was pretty involved, has been involved in Seminary Wives Association.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's kind of something my wife and I have kind of always been. We've always just been really all in, involved in whatever community we lived in. When we were back home, that's what we do. And that's what we like doing. So yeah, my wife is involved in the Seminary Wives Association. She does all she's helped with every year since we've been here with the first year wives, with the after the boxes, you know, settling in and unpacking. She always helps with that, does their Bible studies. And she's a nurse. She got a job as a nurse the day after she moved here. It was really hectic, but we're so glad that she got that job. It was like she barely got a chance to unpack. Like, can you start now? But, it worked out really well. So she's a school nurse, and so we're all on academic calendar right now, so we have Thanksgiving break, Christmas break, all that stuff off.
That's awesome.
So it worked out.
That's
really
nice.
Well.
Fantastic. So let's transition to Dion, and maybe we'll come back to Nick. But Dion, let's hear your story, because you have you bring a different perspective, and mm-hmm. because of your work, because of stage of life that you are coming in, tell us a little bit about your journey to become a student at Concordia Seminary.
Well, when it started with CFW, Walter and I were walking through the campus one day. No.
He's not that old.
That's not how I remember it. No, I've been in ministry for about 30 years, and then in between ministry opportunities, I've worked in sales. So I've got, you know, and all the way up to management. In ministry, I'm a director of Christian education, graduated from Concordia College in River Forest, Illinois.
Go Cougars.
KERF.
Go Cougars.
Oh, not even KERF back in the day. It was not even Concordia University.
It was Concordia College.
It had transitioned.
Had translated from teacher's college to college.
You're trying to go back too far now.
That's Walther's day.
So, so for about 30 years, people have been asking me when I'm going to seminary, and it's usually my employers. So I'm not sure what to think of that. But so when I went to my wife, my last position was mission developer for the Oklahoma district.
Yeah,
one of those cushy district jobs.
Right.
And I said, I think it's time to go to seminary. She said, it's about time. And my kids all said the same thing. My kids are the age of most seminarians, from 30 to 22. So it's kind of fun. Just to kind of piggyback on what Nick was saying, is that for our family, all of our ministry changes and our lifestyle changes as we've gone through different positions and we've moved. We've always looked at it as the next adventure. And that has helped because our kids are adventurous. They're always ready for the next thing. Two of them are in the military. And so they grew up on a camp, a Lutheran camp in Florida, and then one in Illinois. So they know hard work. They also know how to camp out and survive. So the military basic training thing was like, yeah, whatever, you know, for them. Sure. Oh, we're going to go sleep in tents. I asked them how it was. They're like, yeah, we were on worse camping trips with you. so it's no big deal. So it's always the next adventure, and the role that I kind of play with families here is kind of as a grandparent, a surrogate grandparent, because on Friday nights, usually we'll have a campfire in our back on our back porch, and we have s'mores, and, you know, as soon as the first puff of smoke goes up, I've got about 12 kids, you know, rushing around trying to get stuff for s'mores, and then the adults hang out after the kids are all sugared up and run off into the woods. Then the adults just hang out and have fellowship, and it doesn't cost anybody anything. We cover that so that even if you're a young guy who's got, doesn't have two nickels to rub together, and you still want to hang out with people and enjoy some fellowship, it's a good opportunity for them to do that. So that's the kind of thing that we can do to add to the community.
That's awesome. So what was it like? I think we do get a lot of, people who have a background director of Christian education, they have been serving in the church, and they've had a great season, especially in youth ministry, which is high impact, high energy, but sometimes we hear from DCEs like, man, I don't know if I can do this forever. Some guys can.
Sure.
But what was it like transitioning from DCE? And I'm always sensitive to, there are some out in the church that would make DCEs feel like they need to get the full credential. And I just kind of despise that thinking, because director of Christian education have a vocation that's incredibly important. And it's unique to the pastoral office. But how did you think through that? Okay, you kind of told us a lot of people have been pointing you in that direction, but what was it that kind of finally was like, okay?
Well, things were winding down in the position that I was in, and I could see the writing on the wall, and, you know, instead of having some kind of transition foisted upon me, I just decided, you know, this is the best time to do this. Actually, God decided this was the best time to do it, and I just listened this time. Sure. So we moved on and did that thing. But as a somebody from the director of Christian education point of view, I think that is important to value the role that you've got now. Yeah. And you know that it's flexible. So, you know, you might start out doing youth ministry, but then they say, well, you know what, we want to transition to more family ministry. And so more cradle to grave kind of thing. Can you help us do that? And so, you make that adjustment. And then, you know, we want to do something with seniors, and you move into that, or, you know, We want to start a preschool. There's so many things that directors of Christian education can do. I mean, yeah. I was a camp director and a camp program director, and I still support that type of ministry heavily. And so you can move into so many different directions that it's just a matter of, hey, if I'm going to do something different in ministry now, I needed to get more training.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just shifting gears for the next 30 years is really what it is, because pastors never really retire. Oh, that's right. So I'll always have something to do in ministry, because it'd be kind of, I mean, even when I was working in sales, I always tried to stay involved in stuff in ministry as long as my schedule, you know, could be arranged. But so that's, it's just kind of in the blood, so to speak. And this is just the next phase of ministry. So if you're serious about ministry, you know, instead of saying, well, you know, that was a good run, and now I'm just too old, I feel myself aging out of youth ministry, you know, consider going a different direction.
Yeah, transitioning, just pivot. Yeah. And that's an interesting way of looking. DCEs are just incredibly, they're the Swiss Army knives. They're very adaptable, and you can throw lots of different things at them, and they just say, well, yeah, I'll pick that up, and I'll run with that too.
And deaconess also.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so many female DCEs out there that may be feeling the same thing. Mm. And, you know, deaconess is one of those, I think, it doesn't come to mind right away, but it's a very important role in a congregation. And so I want to encourage those too, because, you know, we don't want to leave ourselves short in that area, because, you know, we talk about pastor shortages, but if we look around and go, man, how many congregations are struggling to do human care or education for families, you know, those kinds of things that a deaconess can do, you know, what congregation couldn't use one?
Yeah, absolutely. We just had deaconess Rebecca
Lucas.
Yeah, her last name was about to escape me. Thank you. And because my wife is a deaconess as well. And it's one of those things where, again, just to highlight the need for deaconesses, because you open the door for it.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things when I like for my entire ministry life, there's only so far in the beginning of a relationship that I can get with women, mainly just because I'm a man, for all of the regular normal reasons. And having a wife who's a deaconess, or having a deaconess in your congregation, breaks down those barriers, and you're able to care for the women in your congregation so much more if there is a professionally trained church worker on staff who is hired at least in part for that specific reason. If you look across the DNA of our congregations, I'm willing to gamble that most of the people who sit in the pews of your church are in fact women. And so it's one of these things where we're talking about all these different church workers. And I also really appreciated you saying that you were a DCE, you were happy, but as you were beginning to transition into a next adventure in ministry, you looked at your toolbox and you said, maybe I could use a couple more tools. Because that's another way I describe it for people when they talk about coming to seminary. What's the point and what do we do here? Is we give you a toolbox with very specific tools that you need in order to become a pastor. You can pick up a couple extra tools while you're here if you're ambitious. But then we also teach you how to recognize when you don't have the tools and where to go and look for the next tools that you need. So the idea of continuing education, we do it here. And it sounds like you're advocating for anybody in church work or anybody in any vocation.
Sure.
Not to just, I don't want to say settle where they are, but always look for different ways to grow. And it seems like that was a part of your path to becoming a student here.
Yeah, and one of the advantages of being in St. Louis is you get to try on a lot of different hats.
You can.
If you're to try and, you know, you think you might want to do something in urban ministry, we're right there. You think rural is, you know, 5 minutes across the river, you have rural churches that need people to serve them. There really isn't anything that you couldn't find here.
Yeah.
You know, a specific language group that you want to work with, it's in St. Louis.
Right.
You know, so you have the opportunity to get a lot of different experiences. And then there's the faculty who's just broad in their experiences that you can tap into and say, hey, you know, I was thinking about foreign missions. Tell me more about your experience.
Sure.
And everybody's always willing to sit down and have a conversation. About what the possibilities are. Because when you think of pastor, I think some people think that everybody is going to be in the pulpit of a congregation in rural Illinois for the rest of their life, when that's not necessarily true. You know, that's a perception that's not necessarily the way that it is. There's a lot of different opportunities once you're a pastor.
And you can always get that in class. That's a surefire way of kind of distracting the professor and getting him to get away from his syllabus, is to ask him about his personal path. And then all of a sudden, you know, 20 minutes later or an hour later, he's told you his life story. Yeah. And
especially they're going to talk about asking you to translate something.
Right. Can you tell me about your pathway to ministry?
What would that be in French African? You know, I know you want to hear it in Greek, but you already know it.
What was it like, Dion, as you mentioned, you talked a little bit about your family, that your kids were grown. So you came as an empty nester, basically, to seminary. How has that been for your wife, making that transition? And then I know you've had kids home from time to time. They come to visit. It's not home because it's not the home that they grew up in, but it sounds like they moved a couple of times in their life growing up, so maybe that wasn't a thing at all. But what was that like, coming as an empty nester and then having your kids here? What was that experience like?
Well, I'm always trying to recruit them.
That's good. He's still in sales.
You definitely appreciate that.
Hey, military chaplain is a pretty good gig if you can get it.
And they are... I feel like most people who are interested, not, I don't want to say most, but many who are interested who qualify, there's a desperate need for good military chaplains at the moment.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, coming as empty nesters, it was cool. You know, we didn't have the extra considerations of kids going into school and schedules and all those kinds of wacky things that you have to deal with. So, you know, good on you, Nick. We've done it before, but when our kids come and visit, they love the campus and they love the community, and they just feel like they're a part of it. And that's awesome. You know, part of it is that they're the same age as most of these guys.
Sure.
And so, you know, at the campfire, I can walk away and they'll have a conversation with somebody, and it's they're excited for us, really, to be doing the next thing. So, it's a little bit tight, but we got the extra bedroom this year, so.
Okay, yeah. So you live in the woods as well.
Yeah, we live in the woods as well, and they've got these flexible rooms in between apartments.
Right.
And last couple of years, the other family was a rather large family that lived next to us, and so they had, Tebebu and his family went back to Ethiopia, and the other folks didn't want all the rooms, so we rented one of them.
Sure.
And so now I've got an office. Deb's got her own office. She works from home.
Okay.
She works remotely for the Oklahoma Center for Nonprofits.
Okay. Cool.
And so she has her own office that has a bed in it so the kids can come and stay. And because she works pretty much during the day, they can have access at night. I come home, and the first thing I'm doing is studying. So I'm in my office all night. Mm-hmm. So that's not really helpful for company, but if we had to, we could throw Twin in there.
I know several second career folks that have come, and the wife had a job back home, and there was some kind of creative way of allowing the wife to keep on doing what she was doing, but to work remotely, and that worked all right for you guys.
Yeah, she's in Oklahoma right now. I left her there after Thanksgiving. Intentionally,
right.
Intentionally. She's got a big fundraiser she's doing in Oklahoma City that's going to raise about $250,000. Wow.
Sure.
And then she's got another one that comes up in spring that's about $500,000. So she's in development. So she coordinates all that stuff from here. But it is St. Louis. So if your spouse needs to come and find a job, at least you're in an area where there's a lot of there's a lot of stuff going on, so hopefully they can find something comparable to what they had.
And a decent airport that's pretty easy to fly in and out of. I mean, you can't fly direct from St. Louis to everywhere in the country, but you can. It's certainly doable, and with it being a Southwest hub, you get a lot of you got a lot of mileage out of Southwest being in St. Louis.
a different episode, you guys have both begun to talk about transitions. We need to have some people who do some of that transitional work with mm-hmm. our prospective students. But we even have a list, a published list of potential work opportunities for spouses of students mm-hmm. and things like that. But I want to transition a little bit from transition from the transitions. Well, anyway, it's not a major one because you brought something up in study. And you actually do a thing that I usually recommend not to do is you get out of class and you go home and study. I usually tell guys not to do that because your brain is all fried up. And
well, no, wait a second. At my age, I don't go home and just go straight to study.
There we go.
I have
a nap.
I have the 30-minute power nap every afternoon. And then because Deb's still working.
Right.
You know, so it's not a good time for us to hang out. So I'll then go back and start doing some reading and things like that. And then she'll make dinner. Then we have dinner. And then usually I go back to work. But then about 10 o'clock, I'll knock off at least for an hour and hang out with her because her love language is quality time. Mm-hmm. So we've got to spend time together.
There you go. You're doing that 30-minute buffer, so it just makes me happy. Too many times, because I've tutored guys, they'll be like, well, I go home, and they skip the meal, they skip the power nap, and they go right into studying. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what goes in? Mm-hmm. Probably nothing. And you're probably pushing everything you learned for the last 3 hours out. But since you guys were both second career, I'm imagining that there was at least a little bit of gap between undergraduate or other education before you came to study here.
Yes.
Which is another question I get often. Second career guys, I haven't been in school for a decade or two. Yep. What's the academic load? And I always answer it a particular way because, well, I'm trying to get them to feel like they can come sure. and do it. But I'm interested to hear from your perspectives. What was it like, again, gap between mm-hmm. undergraduate work or even more graduate work and beginning this, because becoming a pastor in the LCMS is just academically rigorous. There's no other way to put it. There's no program that we have where it's not. Mm-hmm. We demand a lot from our pastors, especially in the educational process. So what has that been like? And you guys have now have a few years, both of you, under your feet of learning here. Right.
Yeah, so I was 15 years removed from between undergrad and when I came here to seminary. And it was an adjustment. But it's not unattainable by any means, I don't think. The biggest part for me was getting being able to read faster.
Sure.
I would read just for pleasure a little bit, the fiction novels and things like that. So you can just breeze right through those. But then when you're starting to read some more academic books, it goes a lot slower. So that was the biggest, and still, I mean, I'm still working on that, but being able to read at a faster pace was the biggest challenge for me. And writing was, it took a little bit, but not the writing part came pretty quick. But mostly the reading for me was probably the hardest, and then just trying to figure out what my new schedule is going to be like now, with having a balancing, because there is, time management is critical, especially for a second career, person having a wife, a spouse, if you're a deaconess, and children, because that's important to have that time too, like you were saying, Dion, to have that quality time with your family. And so being able to balance that is very important. And you have to figure it out. It's not hard. I mean, well, I shouldn't say that. It is hard to figure it out.
But we'll stick with it wasn't hard. We'll just clip that and cut out the other part.
I mean, it's not easy, but it's not impossible.
Yeah. Right.
It's not something that's, and professors, that's the other thing too, is that I was very pleasantly surprised about, is the professors are lenient. I mean, they're able, if you need some extra time, you can get it. Yeah. And so that I was very surprised at that when I came, wow, the professors are fantastic, and they want to work with you. They want to help you. So if you are struggling, you can ask for help. There's help available. The library has all kinds of help too. Like, Pastor Glenn, you were talking about tutoring and things like that. That's all available if you need that as well. So it's not something that you can't overcome.
Sometimes that's people think of grad school and they think, seminary is like this cutthroat place where we're going to weed people out.
It's not.
I'm here because I want more pastors for our church. So the last thing that I want is to try to weed guys out or try to play some game that I'm going to like catch a guy so that I can say, aha, you really don't belong here. Maybe Dion felt a different, had a different experience being in my class, because we're going to have to talk about that. I have a couple questions in a minute. But Dion, what's it like? What's it been like for you?
Yeah. I'm proud of the fact that we are so that it is academically difficult.
Sure.
If it was easy, everybody'd do it, and every denomination would. You know, I hear people talking from different denominations, and we, you know, they tell me they also went to seminary, and I say, oh, okay, so let's talk about this. What was your experience like? And a lot of times they don't even have the languages.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so they don't know what kind of editorial choices were made, translational choices were made. And so, you know, they're taking a translation, and they're standing on that and going, this is the word. And you go, ah, you know, there is another level to this. Not that it's not right to go with just in English, and I think that's valid. But just to have that knowledge and that information. So when I'm reading through a commentary and it's got the Greek and the Hebrew, I know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm not ignorant of that stuff, and nobody's going to pull the wool over my eyes and tell me that, you know, this means that. No, I already know that. So, you know, to be able to read the technical information and not be completely snowed by it, you know, is really... That's extremely helpful, especially in preparing sermons and Bible studies. And I think a lot of clientele, you know, whatever you want to call people at the churches, you know, your church members, you can't assume that you're the smartest one in the room all the time. You know, there's a lot of people that have their masters, their doctorates. Mm-hmm. They're very highly intelligent people, and you can't just go in there and say, well, you know, when I was in Sunday school back in fifth grade, we went through David and Goliath, and so this is a story of David and Goliath, and show them the arch book. You're going to have to come up with something better than that, because there's going to be questions.
I think I've mentioned it on the podcast before. I did my vicarage in Huntsville, Alabama, where NASA's headquarters are, where Boeing has a big headquarters, and it's just a massive tech industry place, and literally had a couple of rocket scientists in the parish that I served. And they appreciated, I did my undergraduate in chemistry, so they appreciated a vicar who could talk about science from a scientific perspective. And it gained me a lot of clout. So exactly, you don't have to be in a place like Huntsville. There are going to be very smart people, and no matter where you are in the country or in the world. And when you're the pastor and you have some authority, they don't want an arch book answer.
Right. Or, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just make something up off the fly.
Yeah. And if your answer is, I don't know, it has to be quickly followed, but let me look into that and I'll get back to you. And because we take it so seriously, you have the tool set to go and look.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. One of the things that surprised me is how much technology I needed to utilize at seminary. So just be ready for that. You know, I did my undergrad, I finished it in 1988. So 1988.
I was alive then.
Yeah,
same. I was alive.
That's nice.
But
it's nice to know.
At any point during your undergrad, were you using computers or word processor? So because
yes, there was a
and typewriter.
Yeah. Well, I had a little bit better technology than that because I invested in it. But there was a mainframe down in the basement of Mary Martha that took up an entire half of the building.
Right. Yeah.
And that's probably about as much power as I've got in my phone.
Easy.
Yeah.
River Forest was like cutting edge back in the day.
Yeah, you could get computers. If I remember correctly, we were one of the first ones to have computer science majors.
Yeah.
And but I took my first class in technology and education, and I dropped it. I dropped it because I was like, what's this login thing? What?
I got to remember a password.
Yeah, what's this intraweb thing? And it was in, it wasn't even internet. It was intra. Right, so it was inside the school.
Oh, right.
And so I couldn't figure that out. And I was like, this is just going to be a struggle the whole way. So I dropped that. But I've learned over time, just keep adapting to the new technology. Yeah. And I think it's really helpful the way things are set up. It's just that I wasn't ready for that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I want to ask too about, I wanted to ask about this kind of line of thought of what's study like, and I'm interested in your experience with your classmates, and also kind of in the classroom learning from a professor. So here's the question that I mentioned earlier. So Dion was in one of my classes recently, and there's no easy way to ask this. It's an awkward question, but I know you well enough and I respect you well enough to be able to ask it and to have a little fun with it. So what was it like to learn from a professor that was younger than you?
It's not hard for me because I always look at people, no matter who they are, and know that there's something about them that they know more than I do. Mm-hmm. It could be just anybody in the street. You know, they know more about their job than I know about their job. They may know more about technology than I know. They may know more about world events. There's something that they know more than I do. And the professors here have their doctorate. And they have experience, so I just, you know,
well, I just we had a lot of fun because it was all the rest of the guys were the young bucks straight through for the most part.
Yeah,
and there were several times where you gave some helpful feedback to some of these younger guys in a really in a way that they could only receive from you as a brother, as a classmate, that they couldn't necessarily have received in the same way from me. And it was a lot of fun to see you encouraging your classmates, but also kind of as a person that has a lot more life experience. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is fun. A fun part of seminary is where you get a class, especially in practical, where you're trying to put all this stuff into practice, and the 20 something guys, they're still trying to figure out life.
Yeah.
And you guys have kind of been there, done that, and know a thing or two about applying the gospel and living the Christian life.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
And I tried to hold back too, because, you know, I don't want to take over anybody's class or
you didn't. I would.
You'd have shut me off. That's good.
Yeah,
that's
you good. Were always concerned about that, and that was just not a thing for me.
So if you want to hear, you know, campfire stories about ministry, like, come on down. But I try not to do that too much in class.
Well, let me ask this question real quick. What about your previous professions do you think is going to lend itself directly towards being a pastor, whether it's in a congregation or a camp or whatever, wherever you end up being placed? What about, well, camp ministry being a DCE, there are some clear things, but it is slightly different, I imagine, from friends and classmates that were DCEs before they got here, but especially in business administration. Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think about that past life is going to lend itself towards your first call and your ministry beyond?
Well, for me, in the business world, I had employees, so I was used to dealing with coworkers and dealing with employees, and I did sales too. So I had I would go, you know, to a restaurant and have to, you know, established clients, and then also going out and just cold call, knocking on doors too, and meeting new people and helping them, you know, guiding them along and what they would need for their business. And so I think there's some crossover there with meeting new people and speaking to people that, and especially in a lot of the maybe people that I wouldn't normally associate with,
sure.
But here I am. And I think that's going to be part of my ministry as well, is we're going to be interacting with people that need the gospel and that need care, and having that experience of in the business world doing that, I think is going to, what will help.
Good.
For me to be drawn on, you know, some of the experiences that I had, like my internship was in New York City, and my first call was, you know, Flushing, Queens, and that was tough.
Sure.
That was really tough. And when the pastor would go on vacation, I had to do all the visits, and there was a lot of stuff that I had to do. Like, you know, one of those visits was to the state mental institution in New York City. So, yeah, there's probably not a lot that I'm going to see that I haven't seen worse.
Sure.
And I'm not jamming on the state in New York. It's just the way that
it's a lot of people there.
Yeah. And it was an experience, I think that's going to be, you know, working with a lot of people like Nick. You know, I have a lot of employees, you know, summer camp staff as well as full-time staff, and you know, learning to work with them and making some major mistakes and having to go back and work through all that stuff. And, you know, I've been processing a lot of that while I'm going through seminary and going, what will I do differently?
I think just life experience in general too.
Yeah.
I've been married for, you know, 18 years. I have children. I've
rookie
interacted with, you know, just having those interactions with other families as well. And being there for each other, you know, when you have your circle of friend, you know, being there for each other in times of crisis and in times of joy and celebrating that with them and being, and supporting them when they need, I think having that experience as well as outside of work, but just life experience in general, I think is huge. And I think even like the younger guys, like you, how you were talking in class, I wasn't in that class, but I'm sure when you were giving advice, they were soaking it up. I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
'Cause that's been my experience too, is that the guys that are younger here, they don't look at us old guys like, what are you doing here? They're like, what can I learn? A lot of them are like, what can I learn from, you know?
Yeah.
'Cause I think they respect the life experience that we bring. And I've never felt like an outsider or anything like that among the younger generation that's here. It's a great community where we interact with each other, and there's stuff we can learn that we learn from them too, as far as, you know, what's going on with that generation now, what's important to them, and what makes them tick. It's helpful for both of us, I think.
Yeah, we joked earlier and said that you were the two guys that made it of the second career guys, but I did some stats back in the day that from time to time, our second career and guys straight through college, those two populations kind of ebb and flow. But I think at the least, every class is about a third second career.
Mm-hmm.
If you classify a second career guy as somebody that's at least had a couple of years out of college before they come. So you're not like people don't look at you like, what's the Adam Sandler movie where he like goes back to kindergarten and
you're Billy Madison.
It's not that kind of thing where they're like, whoa, why is this, are you teaching? There's a lot of, it's a very diverse age group in the classroom.
I've never been the oldest.
Yep. Oh, sure.
There's always been at least one guy older than me.
Yep. I've had a student that was in his 80s in my residential class.
It's always been close.
Well, and I never know how, like, so I came here, I finally graduated from undergrad when I was 27, I think going on 28.
Mm-hmm.
And like I had worked and gone to college for most of my college career, even quit college and just worked.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I get here, I'm fresh from college. So guys are like, are you 22? I'm like, nah. And then like, are you second career? You know, no joke. Somebody recently said I look 25 and I'm always going to take it. I don't always believe it.
Thank you.
I don't believe it. But thank you. But it is, again, it's one of those things where, like, you know, I worked at the DMV. I had other jobs where I had employees. I've had to fire somebody. And if you've never had to fire anybody,
it's awful.
It is the worst feeling in the world. I've never found it to be a joy.
Mm-hmm.
But still being young, looking to, so I think about classmates who are older than me and just think about the experience that they came with, life experience. All of these things are interesting. Yeah, it's just such a joy. And then being able to be a little closer than some to the guys that come out of college and being able to be that bridge. Nick, I imagine that's kind of been a little bit of what it might have felt like, where you're not quite I don't want to say grandparent age. Dan, right. I'm trying to be very sensitive. Yeah. But you seem very comfortable.
Yeah. I'm not sensitive.
In who you are. Yeah. But not still straight from college. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with either end of those spectrums. And being in the middle is kind of one of these weird, incredible places where a lot of my classmates, when they became fathers or just married, they would call me and be like, all right, I just got married. What is it like? Yeah. I'm about to become a dad. What was it like, Mike? And I always found myself like, why are you guys asking me these questions? And it's like, oh, yeah, like I just became a dad. So maybe that's why.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. You get to share those experiences with guys that are just getting married or just having kids. We can, you know, if they're having questions or we see, you know, sometimes the child isn't quite behaving how the parents want them to. We can sympathize and say, yeah, remember those days that happened.
Kids are perfect. They do everything you tell them to do.
So we can sympathize with that and encourage them in those. And like I said, my kids like babysitting. So that makes me instantly popular because my kids babysit. So they're like, oh, we wouldn't be friends with them. So we got their kids babysit for us.
And it makes it easy because for the vicarage congregations, we're not having a vicarage baby.
Right.
No, that's right.
That's right. That's right.
That's not going to be part of it.
People would be really surprised.
Yeah, they would. They would. You can maybe come back with a new car. How about that?
Yeah.
Do that.
Yeah, I might do that.
On a more serious note, I think another thing that second career students are able to do, because so much of pastoral ministry is being with people during times of loss, the longer I live, the more people I lose. I just lost my first cousin, who was kind of like a brother to me growing up. I did his funeral, and there's no other way to understand loss as people are going through it. There's no better way than you just have to. It's part of the human experience. I'm sure that you both have experienced losing people. And I think that's another thing that you bring to the task, because you can say, I've had to walk through this before. I know what this is like.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously at my age, there's it's getting to be more and more, I'm in that generation that's raising their kids and their parents. You know, having to do caretaking of both sides. And so, and there's losses and grief that you work through. And that's one of the life experiences. But then again, the joys, you know, having three kids and all the things that they've gone through and done, you know, their accomplishments. It's pretty amazing, you know.
Well, and just the ability to share that as a person of faith, I've lost loved ones.
Sure.
And I've kept the faith.
Yep.
This wasn't the end of me. It was very hard. Not something that I want to do again. But it's something that you realize, well, Jesus has us even in this, whether I live to the Lord or die to the Lord. Everything that we do is to the Lord.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the key things over vicarage is participating in funerals and being there for the families. I mean, that's a time when families need the gospel more than ever, and to be there for them to do that and to be that person that's able to deliver the gospel and bring that peace and that assurance that was one of my favorite parts of vicarage that I was not expecting. But those are crucial moments when people need the gospel.
And all of our students are trained to share the gospel. I don't want to be saying that only a second career person can share the gospel. That's certainly not what I mean.
Happen to you personally. More likely that we've had it happen to us personally the older we get. So that does change how
it changes how we
talk. Absolutely.
You mentioned vicarage, and so let's transition to that. Vicarage. How does there's kind of two different routes that you guys took through the seminary, and those two routes I think are interesting for second career guys. So the typical route, Nick, you did is 2 years of class, a year of vicarage, and then a fourth year. Yep. Dion's taking a different route. So tell us first about the kind of traditional route.
Yeah, so the traditional route is like you said, Dr. Haupt, where we do 2 years of classes and then we go out on vicarage. For me, as a second career guy and having older children and a wife that who works, we're fortunate. One of the other fortunate things about being here in St. Louis is that there are congregations locally that want vicars and that need vicars, and so we're able to be placed locally so we don't have to move. And that was the case for me, so I never even had to move off campus. I've been living in the woods all 4 years that I've been here. And my wife was able to keep her job, my kids were able to stay in school, and then I was able to serve as a vicar locally here in the St. Louis area in Afton at Salem Lutheran Church and School. And so so that's a, and then the vicarage is where we get practical hands-on experience, you know, every, you know, all year long for 12 months where you're working in the church and you have a supervisor that's guiding you and is your mentor and guiding you along in the ministry and showing you how he does things and how things work in their context and getting to do a lot of the ministry things that we'll be doing as a pastor out in the field. It's a wonderful, it's a great experience. Lots of learning. You get lots of opportunities to preach and teach, and it's all hands-on things that we need.
And the local vicarage isn't guaranteed for all of our second career students, but it is something that pretty regularly happens. So what was that like to kind of navigate the vicarage placement process you were requesting to be?
Yeah, so we requested to be local, and Dr. Nielsen, who is our placement director, is very open with how he ranks everything out, and so you kind of know where you're at in the ranking as far as what he prioritizes as most crucial to being staying local to what's not so crucial to being able to stay local, like who really needs to stay, and trying to rank us all out as far as need to stay local. So, you know, whether that be health issues or older children, wife has a job, and all those kinds of things factor in, and financial status, where you're at with your finances, he brings that in as well. So all those things are weighed out, and so he keeps you updated in the process. So the whole time we kind of knew where we ranked on the scale, and we know our class too. We know who wants to be local and who doesn't want to look. We all talk, you know. Sure. We know who's trying to stay local, who's not, who really needs to be local, and who just really wants to stay local if they can, thing. So
it's not this like game or this like huge mystery where you're just like going into this service and people hear about the call service, oh my gosh, I can't go to seminary because they're just going to they might not like me and send me to North Dakota, or not to hate on North Dakotans, or they're going to send me to South Florida, which is where they send me. And frankly, I didn't want to go to South Florida. I said, don't send me anyplace.
I didn't. I didn't want to stick around St. Louis. I grew up here. I was ready to leave. Yeah. And I tell people that I could be here for the entirety of my career. Who knows?
Yeah. So when call day came, I knew I was getting a local vicarage. I didn't know which one.
Yeah.
But when call day came, there wasn't any doubt. I was getting a local vicarage.
Yeah.
So the only surprise was which. So I was kind of, as everybody was getting their call, I'm like, okay, my list kept getting shorter and shorter. And so the guy actually right in front of me got there was two locals left, and the guy right in front of me got a local vicarage. Okay. So then I knew. Sure. I knew which one I was getting, but I didn't know until I was standing up there. So.
And the placement process works very similarly in this kind of traditional route where you go in, you talk to Dr. Nielsen, you have interviews. He's very open about the process.
Yep. It's not a secret
promises,
or anything. So,
good. So that's kind of the traditional route. Mm-hmm. Even our guys that are straight through college go through that route basically. Mm-hmm.
Well, then that's the route too that might kind of segue into a deferred vicarage too. Like maybe you need to have a local vicarage and it's just not going to work out. So maybe we do a deferred vicarage. I'm not sure if that's how it worked out for Dion, but I know for some guys that's how it works out, where they need to stay local for family reasons. But there just wasn't enough this year, so maybe we'll do a different route where we can defer your. Well,
for most guys like me, we want you to go on your vicarage in between your second and last mm-hmm. year so that you can go likely make some mistakes, come mm-hmm. home, work through those mistakes, or just polish things off. But Dion's a different story.
Dion had already made all of his mistakes. He had all kinds of stuff to reflect
on. I'm out of mistakes. Yeah.
No, when we were doing case studies in our class, because mm-hmm. that's something that we did a lot of, and I'm asking guys to reflect on their vicarage. Dion, you still, compared to the guys that had been on 1 year of vicarage, you had a lot more years of case studies mm-hmm. than you could have worked on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was that was not a problem at all. But yeah, tell us a little bit about the deferred vicarage route.
Yeah, so deferred vicarage, that came out of the need of the seminary, because we had a rather large class. And so Dr. Nielsen was searching for facility, you know, different churches, and sometimes they needed a church-school combination because the husband's on vicarage, but the wife's a teacher or a DCE, and they're or a deaconess, and they're trying to figure all that stuff out. And so early on, he asked me to defer, with confidence that I could handle whatever I get into at the vicarage congregation, and then my vicarage will probably be a sole pastor in a location that, you know, I'll have a supervisor from, you know, either the circuit visitor or the DP. I don't know which one it'll be. But that's what it sounds like. That's not all deferred vicarages. Some deferred vicarages are, you know, team ministry and things mm-hmm. like that. It just depends on the person.
Yeah.
But I wanted to make clear that when Nick was saying, you know, there's criteria for, you know, sorting out who's going where, never mm-hmm. is it your GPA.
Mm.
Oh, you know, the good. guy who graduates top in the class and the guy who graduates bottom of the class, both are called pastor.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's one of the things that we have to remember when we go through seminary, that there aren't, you know, extra blue ribbons for, there's no valedictorian in the class.
No.
And so some people are going to, it's going to be a challenge for them, and maybe they, you know, are what they're going to do. Some guys are going to, you know, maybe they have more of an ambition to go further, and they want to worry about their GPA and doing, you know, further studies. But for a lot of us, it's just, I want to get done and get out in the field. That's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So that's not that important.
And I want to preface, I guess not preface, but give a follow-up to that, which is Deion sounds like he's saying, my GPA didn't matter that much to me, but you're a fantastic student. So, but I think your point is well taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that it's not about having a 4.0 GPA and feeling like as a second career guy, man, I have to ace all my classes or else I'm going to like get weeded out.
Yep.
There's not that kind of mm-hmm. pressure. We just want you to pass the classes so that you can, so that we can call you a pastor.
And that comes out in orientation too. I can remember Dr. Mars talking about, especially for second career guys, don't neglect your families.
Yeah.
No.
If neglecting your family means that, so if you have to neglect your family to get an A, you get a B.
I've told students
too. So you have to be smarter about how you do everything than you did probably in undergrad.
Yep.
But my GPA is actually a whole point higher than it was in undergrad, just because.
Yeah. Oh yeah, mine's more than.
Yeah.
Right.
You actually opened a book this time.
That's true.
Found out there's stuff in there.
Yeah, I actually did. Yeah.
Since you didn't make it into.
I do homework now. So.
Into NBA, you know.
That's right. My basketball didn't work out. That's what I told. That's what I told my pastor when I was in eighth grade. And I was like, Pastor, I'm not going to be a pastor. I'm going to go to the NBA. I'm the best basketball player in this town of 2,800 people.
I mean, Larry Bird, that's right. It's one of the greatest of all time.
Right.
You never know.
That's right. That's
well, you ended up playing on our basketball team.
I get to be a Concordia Seminary preacher. Even in my, I'm 40 years old. I get to be the old guy on the team, but it's fun.
I played on a lot of tennis fun. Team, and I wasn't the worst guy.
That's right. Yeah, I'm not the worst basketball player either.
I'm not a great tennis player. I'm not even a good or decent tennis player, but I've played it every once in a while. And I learned that being athletic against somebody who knows what they're doing doesn't help.
Doesn't
anyway.
Help. Yeah.
They'll just make you run all over the court.
Yeah. See, I was I was going to join the basketball team. I told Dr. Navsker that I or threatened him that I was going to join the basketball team because I grew up playing ice hockey. So I get all my fouls. So I just I never get any points. I never play offense. Mm-hmm. I just play defense, and you know, send me out there to take care of one person, and I'm good.
There you go.
That's awesome. We should probably transition to our ripe for the picking.
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, we're used to having – we haven't mentioned this before, but our regular listeners will know this is the first double guest time. Mm. So usually one person is the focus of our attention. Mm. We do all that. But, yeah, probably. Just before we got here, before you got here, actually, because I was here before you. I'm almost always here before you got here. My dad was a drill sergeant, though. Punctuality is a thing for me. Not to say it's not for you. Anyway.
It isn't.
I just lost my train of thought. About
if you're 15 minutes early, you're 10 minutes late.
I was telling them that you're the time master of the show and not me. So while I'm here on time, I don't care how long we sit here and talk. Mm-hmm. But we have families to get to and things to get to, schoolwork. Mm-hmm. I'm one of these overly ambitious guys who decided to get an advanced degree beyond my MDiv. And so, you know, life.
Well, and I'm just excited about my my things from Ripe for the Pickin' because the viewers and our listeners came through for me.
They did.
They actually filled up my list of Ripe for the Pickin' or Leave It on the Tree. And so, yeah, shout out to Sam Sessa, to Randy Buckman, and to Sarah Gulseth for listening and throwing me a whole bunch of stuff. And that is that some of these things kind of inspire the things that I'm going to use today. The first one, though, is one that I came up with on my own. So ripe for the picking or leave it on the tree. I think you guys will I think because of your age, I think you'll get this, but we'll see. Festivus. First, we have to see. Do you even know what that is? It's from Seinfeld. Neither of them. No. You don't know what Festivus is.
You totally lost me.
I got to pick a different one.
I will say I just started watching Netflix. I see Netflix has Seinfeld, so I've just started. I'm in like season two of Seinfeld.
Man. I'm not a I get it, and I'm not gonna obviously numbers mean something, but I was not one of the people who watched Seinfeld.
All right, well I'm moving on then.
Yeah, sorry.
I guess like I can leave it on the tree.
Like I said, that was mine. So let me try another one.
I just triggered so many people by saying I've never watched Seinfeld, but
I've never either because I lived in New York at that time. See, why do I need to watch that?
I've seen clips, but that's
shout out to any listeners that know what Festivus is. This is airing. This show is airing in our Advent leading up to Christmas season. So
I'm just glad that it's not something I'm supposed to know from the agenda. You know, that I was like, I've never heard of this.
You can't be certified now. Yeah. the liturgical season of Festivus. All right. How about this is surely you've seen this. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the claymation version. Mm-hmm. Is it ripe for the picking for you or is it leave it on the tree?
No, that's ripe for the picking.
Okay.
Ripe for the picking.
Yeah, all right. Got to do that.
Great one. Classic.
Yeah, it's a classic, right?
Got to watch it.
When his nose lights up and you get that Yeah.
The Island of Misfit Toys.
The Island of Misfit Toys.
You got to watch every year, right? Otherwise they'll be forgotten forever.
I know.
Forever.
I love it. I love it. I wanted to be a dentist. All right. That one was from Sam Sessa, by the way.
Right, so for the picking for me. But I think I recently, Leave It on the Tree. I don't know why. Yeah, it's not because I don't like it. It's just lost on me now. I don't know. I grew up. I'm too old these days. I don't know. Right for the picking or Leave It on the Tree, video games.
Leave It on the Tree.
Okay.
I want to pick it, but I have to leave it on the tree. Otherwise, I never stop.
I played too many video games on Thanksgiving break.
Somebody recently told me, I was having this conversation, they were like, I don't play video games anymore because I'm an adult. I was like, what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, it's addicting.
I probably played 4 or 5 hours of Minecraft over a break.
Nice.
Sure.
Nope.
On the wrong day, I should say, I could play 4 or 5 hours of video games on a single day, but most days my friends text me and ask me to play, and I'm like, kids or grad school. One of those things. It's right for the picking for me, though. I love video games.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Good stuff. Me too. Right for the picking. All right. So right for the picking, or leave it on the tree. This is a shout out to Randy Buckman. Thanks for this one. Country music.
Are we talking the real country music or today's country music?
Now, that is an important difference. I will let you make the call on that.
I have Johnny Cash on Sun Records on vinyl in my apartment right now.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Johnny Cash is ripe for the picking for me, too.
I picked up at Goodwill the other day, Roy Clark Live.
Mm.
So, yeah, you know where my, yeah.
Fantastic.
But, of course, it's in there with all of my 70s and 80s.
But Keith Urban or some of these guys that, or even like Darius Rucker.
That's like Florida Georgia Line.
That's 70s, 80s pop music. That's and we're past that, you know. That's Peaches and Herb, and you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't forget it.
Yeah.
I don't care if they sing with a twang, if they're wearing
no lady doodads
Antebellum? All over their jeans. Right. You know? And if, you know, Dale Watson is probably the one that right now, he's current, but he sounds old-timey.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Mm. David Allan Coe?
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
Leave it on the tree.
All right. I had this this whole season in life where I was super into country music, and I had a cowboy hat and cowboy boots.
Oh, yikes.
We should find a picture, and it would my wife would say he should have left it on the tree.
I mean, I feel like you can get a pass because you're from Indiana. But
Right. I don't met my wife at the state fair, you know.
Yeah. There you go.
True story. But, yeah, with the cowboy I would say boots for, and the for now if it was old-time country, I would say ripe for the picking. I love Johnny Cash, but a lot of the modern stuff is totally leave it on the tree for me.
Yeah, I can't do it.
I mean, I'm with you. Country music is leave it on the tree for me. That might not surprise people. But I will say, you won't appreciate it, but me and Dorothy's first dance was Lady Antebellum, Just a Kiss.
Mm.
So I chose a country song for our first dance.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good country songs out there, don't get me wrong, but it's just...
Yeah, but you probably don't consider Lady Antebellum to be country music.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right.
We'll see. There we go.
Too pop for me.
It's a country... Anyway, we'll move on. Right for the pickin' or leave it on the tree. And I had what I was going to ask you, and then I put my phone down. Self checkout aisles.
For me, that's a recipe for disaster.
Okay.
Because you know, you're going to have to come and help me check out anyway. So I might as well just do it. I might as well just go through the thing where I can greet somebody and say, "Hey, thanks for doing this," because I was going to mess up that guy's life for an hour. You know, because I always get something wrong. And, sure. And then they're like, "Oh no, you can't do that." And it's like, "Come on, man! If I go over there, I can do it." So I gave up on them pretty early. I'm the reason they still have people and still have checkout lines.
That's fair.
My wife does most of the shopping, so when I go shopping, it's just like a few items. So I just go self checkout just to get in and out. So I guess for me, it's right for the picking for the kind of shopping that I do.
Yeah, I would. I do. A lot of our shopping, we use Instacart now. So, but I like grocery shopping. So, I was just at the grocery store. Well, I almost was there two times in the same day, because I'm the go get stuff. So, yeah, I was self checkout line. So, right for the picking for me.
Yep. I studied at Westfield House, and England is always a little bit in front of us when it comes to technology, which just gets my pot going because Dorothy's British and I don't like she always this phrase the sun never sets on the British Empire anyway. So it's annoying when they're ahead of us, but that's when I first got involved with it, and they had something like Instacart. I don't like Instacart because I don't think they pick out the produce and things that
that's
I want.
That's the problem, and that's Instacart, 100%. Yeah.
It drives me crazy.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm a big self-checkout person, and when no offense somebody's slowing down the machine, it's like, yeah, there's a line over there for you.
I know my place. I'm not going to mess with you. I'm going over there. I'm going to,
I'm a complete product of my generation. Convenience is everything to me. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. All right. So this one is thanks to Sarah Golseth. Sushi, ripe for the picking. Mm-hmm. Leave it on the tree.
Leave it on the tree.
Oh. Quick to the point.
Yeah, leave it on the tree.
No. Oh, I've tried. It just hasn't worked. Maybe I just haven't had good sushi. I don't know.
Totally ripe for the picking for me. I love sushi. Now, love sushi.
It took me a while to answer because I, you know, when we lived in New York, it was a Korean neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so I learned to eat it.
Sure.
And like seared tuna, I like that. So it took a little while. It's, if you said, let's go out and get something to eat, I probably wouldn't say, hey, yeah, let's go for sushi. But if everybody else was cool with it, then I'd go along.
There's a great sushi place here in St. Louis, and recently I took a couple of our enrollment team members, and it was all you can eat sushi, and literally we hurt ourselves. We went for it because they charged you for pieces that you don't eat.
Mm. Oh,
so
interesting.
It was like 50 cents for a half piece or a dollar for a whole piece if you don't eat it after you've ordered it. So I was like, well, I'm getting my money's worth. It was a challenge.
They went for my birthday when I was not in town. I'm just going to throw that in there. You know, I'm a host of a podcast. I get to say stuff like that.
I wasn't going to say. You noticed that I said a few enrollment team members.
That's right. So. I'll bring it up. That's all right.
No hurt feelings.
It's just life these days, right? Right for the picking or leave it on the tree. You're going to stay with the food theme. Mm-hmm. Mall food courts.
If it's got a Chick-fil-A, I'm good.
Okay.
And it's not Sunday, you know.
I was going to say, that the timing of that one matters a little bit. Does Chick-fil-A in the mall food court stay open on Sundays?
They do not.
Oh, okay. Nope. All right.
Nope.
I don't
Not in Iowa, anyway. Around.
They probably don't anywhere. I think that's a thing.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Nope. No, it's right for the picking for me, you bet. I love fast food.
Yeah.
It's awful.
I'm the same. I love mall food courts. Just the food there is just the greasiness of it, the homemadeness of it.
Yeah, there's the hard thing for me is like only going to one. It's like, well, can I get a few of them?
That's when you go to the one where like
samples.
You get like
you do the world tour.
A meat, like you get three meats and noodles or rice or something like that. Then you get a little bit of everything. Yeah.
That's the only one that's ripe for the picking for me is Panda Express.
Okay.
Or Chinese food in general, but that's the only thing that I'll order from a mall food court. Mm. Everything else for me is absolute trash. Leave it on the tree.
What about like the ones that are like the Cajun cafe where you could get bourbon chicken?
Do I look like we've had this Cajun food? You know me.
We have this conversation all the time that Ben is such a pretentious eater.
I'm sweating thinking about Cajun food, man.
We're both foodies, and I like high quality food. And there are some things that I only like high quality. I can be very bougie, but I'm also a very, I like pizza rolls and emos.
I'm lactose intolerant and I don't like spice.
Ben doesn't eat toasted ravioli. I think that's the most offensive thing. Anyway, got a question whether you can stay in St. Louis long term. It is delicious, man. We'll have it. Anyway. Well,
this has been a lot of fun.
This has been fun. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on. And this is one of those occurrences where a listener wrote an email and said, hey, I'm currently second career thinking about ministry. I think it'd be really beneficial and helpful for other guys who are in a career already but have little strings pulling on them thinking about ministry. So could you have an episode with second career guys? So if you're listening, we do read the emails. We do read the comments and occasionally respond. We can't do everybody's idea because, you know.
Yeah,
you can't just do everybody's idea.
But we read the YouTube comments. A couple of people have shouted out at me on Twitter, so we're findable on social media. If you shout out to us,
if you had to give one piece of advice for anybody thinking about considering going into church work, what would that be?
I've been thinking, especially for second career guys, I know for me. You have a family, right? You have a wife, you have kids, and it's like, am I being irresponsible by quitting my job and going to seminary? I think could be a big hurdle to have to overcome. And I know that was one for me too, having to rationalize that and just knowing one of the great blessings for me personally and for my family for coming here, being able to see firsthand how God cares for his people. it was scary to quit my job, sell my house, and move to the seminary, try and still be able to have a wife and kids. But there are so many generous people that want to give to the church and that want to provide for people going, guys and gals going into the ministry to be a deaconess or a pastor. That the financial support that we've received to help keep us, has been overwhelming. So I would just say that if the financial part of it is something that's rightfully holding you back, especially if you're a second career guy with kids and a wife and a family, that it can be done. And there's a lot of support out there. I'm in awe and thankfulness, gratefulness, and shock of all the wonderful support that people that I've never even met and that I probably never will meet giving to the seminary to support us. So
that's awesome.
So good.
Yeah, I'd have to say, just do it. You know.
Yep.
Put it in God's hands where it belongs, because that's where you're going to find the rest of your life. Yeah. Is just putting it in God's hands and He'll He'll carry you through. That's just. You can't do it any other way. You either have to trust Him to make it all work out for you, or don't go. If you can't learn to trust God, ministry is going to be really hard. If you're always second guessing that this is what you're supposed to be doing. So if you've got that feeling, you already know that there's a call there and that you're being yanked on. Not that we're called to seminary, but called into ministry.
Yeah.
So pursue it until you get a no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you get a solid no, then you know it's not for you yet. You just need to keep poking and prodding a couple times down the road. But you never know how circumstances are going to change, and God's going to open the door. Awesome. So put it in His hands. That's where it belongs.
Amen.
Awesome. Nick, Dion, thanks again for joining us. It's been a blast and pleasure. God's blessings on the rest of the term. God's blessings on the rest of the year. I'm sure that both of you guys are going to be great, well beyond the walls here of Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis. And thank you for being students here and for joining us in this career path of becoming pastors to serve God's church, to bring the gospel to all people, and to bring more and more into the body of Christ. And thank you all for tuning in. If you're listening or watching on YouTube, we're still doing a book giveaway. I haven't always been explicit in this, but if we don't currently have your information here at the seminary and you're sitting on the fence whether or not you want to become a seminarian, there's going to be a link in the description to our request for information. And if you click that link and fill out the form in the comments right under the fig tree, Ben is going to send you a book.
Yeah, and I haven't sent those books out, so if you're like, yeah, you've said that a couple times, and I still haven't gotten a book, trust me, I got your information, and I'm getting to that, so we'll get the book to you, hopefully before Christmas.
Did you get a free book?
I didn't get a free book, so that's fantastic.
Well, you can't say that. I was a student here, and I got lots of free books before I became a student.
There we go.
Me and Ben weren't doing this podcast before you guys.
That's true. The admissions department is so great now.
We appreciate you guys not waiting a couple years, but had you waited a couple years, you might have got a free book.
That's all right.
Anyway.
You're right. You're right that we have gotten free books since we've been here, some free books. So it's
we might be able to give our guests a free book.
Well, I think we'll see. About didn't I hear Sculptor Spirit? I think so. We already had to buy that one. So.
Oh well, there you go.
But it's a good book, so it'll be fun to get. If you get it, you can already read it before you come, and you'll be ahead.
There you go. Cost of being ambitious.
That's right.
If you're listening, if you're a listener, and you yourself are a pastor or already a church worker or a parishioner, and you know somebody who you think might be a good church worker in the future, don't keep it to yourself. Please say let something. Them know. Share under the fig tree with them. Have them fill out the RFI so we can get in contact with them, get to know who they are, bring them on our campus, let them get an inside look of what it looks like to become both a seminarian and a potential future pastor or deaconess. We would love to meet them. And as always, thank you for tuning in to Under the Fig Tree. We'll see you next time.